Joining us on the line right now is Sekou Smith of NBA TV and NBA.com's Hangtime blog. Sekou, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Sekou.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. We're talking a little bit of Sixers, so kind of let's make the segue to your article that you wrote earlier today on the your NBA Hangtime blog on NBA.com. We've seen all these various power rankings by the Sixers, you know, with the Sixers in the top five in the NBA. How successful do you think the Sixers team can be this year?
Well, guys, I honestly think, you know, the sky's kind of the limit for them in terms of, you know, pushing their way into that top four. And really in the East, you know, you're talking about getting in line behind the Bulls and the Heat and whatever order they finish in that top two. But beyond that, I think it's wide open. And I think, you know, the team that kind of got on the horse and had a strong start, you know, in this abbreviated season has the best chance to really climb that ladder. And I think the Sixers have done a fantastic job. I've always been a big Drew Holiday fan, even when he was drafted and he wasn't playing a whole lot. I was telling people that I thought he had a chance to be a really special player just from watching when he was in high school and knowing some people in the L.A. area who were telling me about him when he was, you know, as early as his sophomore year of high school. They were saying he just had, you know, that it factor. You know, he's kind of a special player. So I think when you add a young, talented point guard to your nucleus of, you know, Elton Brand and Iguodala and all those guys, I think that's what pushes you over the hump when that guy starts to get it. And then you bring in a coach like Doug Collins, I think, and he puts it all together.
Right, definitely. You brought up Drew Holiday, and that was another point we wanted to touch on. You know, with their younger roster, this team is kind of built for this kind of compressed 66-game season. Other than Drew Holiday, what do you think about some of this team's other younger guys, like an Evan Turner or a Thaddeus Young?
Well, you know, it's weird. I'm a Michigan guy, so for a long time I could barely stand to watch Evan Turner, especially the way he was, you know, going at my Wolverines while he was in college. But, you know, I wasn't sure how his game would translate to the pros. Steve Smith, who works with us here at NBA TV, you know, was trying to argue me that, hey, you know, if a guy's the Big Ten player of the year, you can bet he's going to get to the NBA and be a player. But I was always very skeptical of whether or not Evan Turner's game would translate. I just wasn't sure of what his position would be. I wasn't sure he could guard his position in the NBA, and I really didn't think he was a two guard. Some people thought he would be a shooting guard in the NBA. I think he's more of a small forward. You know, and to me, what did the Sixers need with another guy in that spot? Because they had Andre Iguodala. But Thaddeus is a guy whose talent I've watched for a long time. I saw him when he played in high school in Memphis, and when he was here in Atlanta for 1 year at Georgia Tech, I watched him there as well. I was really kind of mystified that he wasn't a better player at Georgia Tech based on how good he was in high school. Now that he's in the NBA, I see more of what I saw from him when he was a lot younger. He's just a skilled guy, you know, with some really good size, athletic, very smart basketball player, and a guy who knows how to play the game. And that, to me, always, you know, shows itself by the time you get to the league.
Right, definitely. And just to kind of put a bow on talking about the article you wrote today, one of the things you wrote was that the Sixers, you thought the Sixers may just in fact be that model franchise in the wake of the lockout, you know, how you build the franchise, you know, in this quote-unquote new NBA.
Yeah.
Do you think, and this is one of our debates that we've had on the show and we've had, you know, with other fans, do you think that it's possible, you know, in the quote-unquote, again, new NBA, for a team to win without a superstar?
Yes, I do, and I think we actually saw the blueprint for this, you know, long before this previous, you know, this lockout we just had. When Detroit, you know, went to six straight Eastern Conference Finals and won a championship and then played for another one in 2005, to me that was kind of the roadmap for a lot of franchises in that you could put together a really solid team top to bottom as opposed to, you know, the old formula of riding two superstars. And then in the current case, everybody seems to think you need three. You know, superstars. But I think that should have been a signal for a lot of franchises that, hey, there's a different way to build and build towards a championship. Now, that's not the guarantee that you're going to get to the finals that way. But, I mean, the fact that it can be done and that it's a feasible option in terms of trying to build a team that can, you know, be a perennial playoff team, that should have been the signal for any team wondering, you know, if that could be done in that fashion. And I think now, certainly with the lockout and the way things are structured, if you're a young team who's, you know, and you've drafted well and you have a couple of good pieces in place, the system is set up for you to be successful if you continue to make good decisions about your roster, you know, drafts and the players you have, and adding the right pieces to your mix to keep growing and getting better year after year.
Right.
Sekou, I know there have been some early season plot lines. Of course, like, you can't go a few minutes without talking about the Heat, and now you have the Clippers. But I think the most surprising plot line is the point guard in Minnesota. Sekou, I guess, like, is Ricky Rubio, I guess, better than advertised? And actually, can he keep this up? Because right now he's like he's turning, like, I don't know, he's turning some heads.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any doubt he's turning serious heads. You know, I've had to eat a little crow on Rubio, only because, you know, years ago when friends of mine in the business who, you know, were talking about him and hyping him up, I was kind of on international superstar overload. You know, I'd heard all the hype about Darko, and then he gets here, and I'm, you know, and you get disappointed. And then there were lots of, you know, mid to late first round international picks over the last 5 or 6 years who've never panned out or never come over from Europe and done a whole lot in the league. So I was afraid Rubio might be another one of those sorts of guys. But after watching him, you know, just in this initial stage of his NBA career, man, and I watched him in person finally Saturday night. It's uncanny, the skill and the way he attacks defenses. He's such a textbook player, but he's also completely unorthodox and has to be impossible for coaching staff to prepare for, because so much of what he does is instinctive and really off of feel and what's going on in the course of the game. My favorite thing about him, believe it or not, is something, you know, very trivial. He just never gives his dribble up. And you don't see that a lot of times now in a guy who's not a scorer. Like, normally if a guy's pounding and keeping his dribble, it's a guy like Kobe Bryant who's keeping that dribble to get a shot, not necessarily to facilitate or make plays for other guys. But Rubio keeps his dribble and dribbles underneath the basket and around the basket and all through the lane. But he's always got his mindset thinking, who can I get this ball to for an easy shot, as opposed to how can I take another shot and, you know, and do this thing by myself. And I think that's a throwback move by him that, you know, purists of the game would absolutely love to see him play at a high level for a long time.
Yeah, and Sekou, I guess, like, other than the tremendous, I guess, like, passing instincts you have, like, I think, like, the two things that I took from just, like, watching Rubio on League Pass was, like, one, his defense is pretty good. I saw he was frustrating Derrick Rose at the time when he played the Bulls, and also, like people were, I guess, criticizing his shot. His shot's not as bad as I thought it was. Like, I thought it was going to be like Rajon Rondo in his rookie season type. But like it looks like his shot is like one. I just think his shot needs to be average for him to be an elite player. You'd agree?
Yeah, I do. I don't think he needs to be, you know, Jason Capono from the 3-point line. You know, I don't think that needs to be his major focus. Obviously, his shot will improve. But he's most dangerous with the ball in his hands and on the move. And if you don't believe it, ask Kevin Love, who's averaging 26 points, you know, nearly 26 points a night. And a lot of that is based on just being in the right place at the right time and getting, you know, beautiful, you know, gift-wrapped passes from Ricky Rubio. The other thing about Rubio's game that I think you mentioned surprises, I don't think people realize how big he is. And when I say I don't think people realize it, I'm talking about the other guys he's playing against every night, you know. And obviously they'll get used to him the more they see him, but that doesn't mean you can stop him. I mean, he's a solid 6'4" in some change. So, I mean, he's not some little guy. He's not some 6-foot flash. He's a 6'4" guy with speed and, you know, and great court vision and just absolutely outlandish handles. I mean, he's what you want at the position. I think the fact that he's had a few years of seasoning in Europe and had a chance to stumble and, you know, there was all these reports about him struggling over there. Well, a lot of guys struggle over there based on the way they play. You know, Magic Johnson has contended for a long time that Rubio's game was better suited to the NBA than it would be to Europe, and I think that's bearing some fruit.
Right.
Sekou, I guess, like, there have been a couple, I guess, surprise, like, / disappointing teams. Like, a couple that come to mind are a team that I guess you're around or, like, locally, the Atlanta Hawks. Like, can you just explain, I guess, because I was looking, I mean, like, Joe Johnson's, like, having, like, I guess he's shooting, like, 40%, but it looks like Teague's stepping up, but they've lost Horford. Like, can the Hawks keep this up?
You know, I wrote something about this last week when Al Horford got injured, that if there's any team in the league that will confound you and just completely do whatever is not called for in the script. It's the Hawks. You know, everybody will assume that they'll fall apart now that Al Horford's injured. And, of course, they've won three in a row. I mean, I wish I could explain them. And I've been here in Atlanta for 7, 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And the first 5 I was here, I covered them. I covered the beat. There's no explanation for how it is they go about getting things done. You know, Saturday night, Rubio and the Timberwolves are beating them senseless. They're up, you know, 18 points. And the Hawks just march right back and win the game. You know, they're a weird team in that they have a lot of talent at different spots. And Lord knows they've made a ton of mistakes, you know, the past 7, 8 years in terms of personnel, drafts, trades, who they signed to a big contract, who they didn't keep on the roster, those sorts of things. But they've had enough talent to find a way to overcome that. And then they've had two coaches, first Mike Woodson, obviously, and now Larry Drew, who were really – you know, suited for the job at hand. You know, they had the right coach at the right time who could push just enough of the buttons that you needed to get some winning out of this roster. At one point, they had a chance to follow the same model, I think, that Philadelphia has a chance to follow now. You know, you have a young core, and you got to make you have to really be shrewd about the decisions you make, add the right piece, know when to break up your core a little bit or tweak things a little bit. The Hawks have struggled with that. They struggled with that process of knowing when to trade a guy, move a guy out, and bring something else in that what you need. It's an ongoing process, and the thing I tell people all the time, there's nothing more difficult in the NBA than taking a team, from that 9, 8, 9, and 10 range and pushing them up to that 3, 4, and 5 range. It's one thing to go from the back of the pack in the cellar to be in a playoff team. You're going to make that leap at some point. No matter who you are, it's happened now. Basically every franchise in the league. You're either going to get lucky in the draft, or you're going to finally say, you know what, we got to be good, and we're going to spend the money to go out and get a player that can come in and turn our franchise around. But what's really tough is finding a way to go from that step B to step C, and taking that next step and going from a good team to a great team. And the Hawks have yet to really be able to do that consistently. And there are a lot of teams in that same boat around the league.
I totally agree, Sekou. And on the flip side, I mean, disappointing teams. The one team that sticks out to me, and like maybe I guess like it was, I guess like closer to happening, but people didn't want to admit it. The Celtics just like old. Like after last night, like watching them against Oklahoma City. I mean, like Kevin Garnett, Hall of Famer, but I mean he's a future Hall of Famer that really can't jump at this point. I mean, like do you see like I don't know like. Like, do you see, like, this being, like the last run? And I don't even think it's going to be a run. I think they're barely going to make the playoffs, even in the East. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think they've definitely hit that point where they have to start thinking about their long-term future and, you know, how do they solidify that. You got to remember how many games these guys have played, you know, in over the course of the last 4 seasons. And not just how many games, but how many knockdown, drag-out, gut-busting playoff games, regular season games. When you commit to playing at a high level the way the Celtics have the past few years, it takes the starch out of you. And when you do that with guys who are in the twilights of their careers, you know, and that goes for not only Garnett, but for Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. These guys are not, you know, working on their rookie contracts, obviously. These guys are basically all at that stage of their careers where you know this is it. So the wear and tear on your body, you know, and emotionally, I think, is a lot to put on that group. And expect them to come back this year and still be in that realm, I think it's just too much. You got too many young teams, too many maturing teams that are ready to push them out of the way. And the Celtics see it. I think they know the writing's on the wall. It's just a matter of, you know, how long they can hold together. They're probably trying to get through this year and see, you know, okay, how do we piece this thing together around Rondo going forward? But it's going to be a battle. I mean, because there are a lot of teams, the Indiana Pacers, there are a lot of teams that want a piece of that thing in the Eastern Conference. And the East, is last few years, has steadily, you know, added players, added, you know, franchises that are ready to, you know, to take that next step and get into that playoff mix. And, you know, I always say when somebody goes up, somebody has to go down. Well, the Sixers, the Pacers, they're coming. And that means somebody's got to fall back to the pack, and it's probably going to be the Celtics.
See, this is why Sekou Smith is awesome. He knows about the Pacers, man. No, but lastly, like, Sekou, like, your latest blog post
you mentioned, I guess, the new, I guess, like, Dwight Howard news where he just woke up and decided he wanted to be on the Clippers. I mean, like, other than the obvious, like, I don't know, like will David Stern, like, obviously reject, like, will he pull his, like, rights out and reject the trade if Blake Griffin or Chris Paul isn't involved? Because, right, because it's impossible to happen, correct, without involving Blake Griffin.
No, not necessarily impossible, but, you know, that was a unique situation where the Chris Paul trade that was initially, you know, rumored to be happening between the Lakers and the Rockets, that three-team deal, the league had a stake in that, you know, by being the, you know, the technically being the owner of the Hornets. Well, they don't have any say in where Dwight Howard goes. That's something that's totally up to the Orlando Magic. And, you know, if I'm reading it correctly, Orlando's perfectly willing to let Dwight finish out his season in a Magic uniform. They're not, you know, why they would do that, I don't know. But, I mean, right. if they're naive enough to believe that they can keep this guy around by having a big season and he'll somehow have a change of heart, I think they're crazy. You guys know as well as I do, when a girl tells you she wants to break up, she wants to break up. I mean, she may, you know, she may let you go on a couple more dates with her or come by and try and sweet talk her and woo her back. But if she's already told you, it's over. At some point in time, it's going to be over. And I think that's where Dwight is right now with the Magic. You know, he's being a professional. I commend he and the organization and Stan Van Gundy and all of them. I think they're doing a stand-up job in terms of how you handle an absolutely untenable situation. They got the All-Star game in Orlando, and I know the Magic don't want to have the headache of Dwight leaving before that game is played.
Right.
Without, you know, they don't want that hanging over that All-Star weekend in Orlando. And I can understand that. But really, if they're going to wait this thing out and risk losing Dwight to free agency and not get anything in return, I'm telling you, it would be the most devastating thing, you know, to the franchise and in that city since Shaq left. And I can't believe they would allow those fans to have to live through another, you know, situation like this where you lose an all-time great franchise-type player in that same fashion. I just cannot imagine they're going to do that.
Right. Sekou, just to close that Howard topic, where would you, I guess, predict that he would go? I mean, like, isn't the Lakers the most reasonable destination for him at this point? Like, because the Lakers have the pieces and Dwight wants to be there, and does it make that much sense?
No, actually, I don't think the Lakers are the logical destination for Dwight. I happen to think Dallas is. You know, I happen to think that Dallas would love to have not only Dwight, they'd also like to see Deron Williams in a Mavericks uniform. He's a guy who's from the Dallas area. They're both potentially going to be available. And Dallas, if you look at their roster and the way they did business this season, they didn't sign anybody to long-term contracts. They lost Tyson Chandler and a bunch of other guys went out the door via free agency. And that was a calculated move by the guy who I think, love him or hate him, is the best owner in professional sports. Sorry,
yep.
Jerry Jones, you know, but I think Mark Cuban is doing what, you know, only the shrewdest of owners would do, and that's taking a championship, you know, season and running with it and then looking at his franchise and saying, you know what, we're not going to make another run necessarily. If we do, great, but if we don't, so be it. But we're going to prepare ourselves to move into that next era when Dirk is, you know, in fading and no longer the franchise player here, and we're going to be established with yet another guy or two, you know, in this new NBA, this new world order, if you will, of the NBA, and we're going to be ready to go for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years.
Yeah. Hopefully, Vince Carter is not part of that new world order.
I don't think Vince is going to be in the long term blueprint for the Mavericks. So I wouldn't worry about Vince being around there.
we're live with Sekou Smith of NBA.com and NBA TV. Sekou, just a couple more questions before we let you go. We talked briefly about the Lakers. It just seems like, you know, people wanted to write them off for dead, but it just seems like they're not going to go away. I mean, you know, we've seen all these commercials for, like, you know, the Kobe system. Like, is the Kobe system enough to take this team, you know, deep into the playoffs this year?
Yeah, I definitely think they could go deep into the playoffs. I would never write the Lakers off with the talent they still have on the roster. But, you know, I don't know that they're a championship team right now based on what I see. They certainly have, you know, Gasol and Kobe and Andrew Bynum, who's playing at as high a level as I can remember him playing as a pro. But the bench is you
they
know,
have Jason Capono, Sekou. They have Jason
I know, I
Capono.
Love Capono. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I love Capono. But I think you need a little bit more. I just feel like, you know, and they got one of my other all-time favorite characters in the league in Josh McRoberts.
Yes.
He's one of my main guys, man. I love Josh McRoberts
on this show.
But I just think, you know, you're talking about winning championships. You have to go through the Thunder, you know, in the Western Conference. You're going to have to deal with that same Mavericks team we're talking about and those old men down in South Texas. You know, the Spurs are going to be around. So if you're talking about beating one of those teams in a series, I don't know that the Lakers have what it takes to get past them. I think they're so old at the point guard position in Derek Fisher and then so green at the position with a young guy like Darius Morris, who I think has a chance to be a really special player, but is not going to be prepared to be that guy right now. It makes it tough for me to look at the Lakers based on what I saw from them last year. And I covered the Western Conference playoffs. I had the Mavericks from the start of the playoffs last year until they, clinched the championship against the Heat. The West is, when it doesn't have some of the superstar power it had a few years ago, the West is still absolutely treacherous. I mean, it is a tough, tough road to come out of that Western Conference. The Lakers didn't look to me like a team that had it last year, and I don't know that they're a better team right now than they were then.
No, I completely agree. I think we both completely agree with you on that. Just one last question. You know, everybody listening to the show is, you know, familiar with your work on NBA TV and NBA.com. Is it really that much fun, you know, working with guys like, you know, 3D and Smitty and Rick Kamla? Because we see you guys and we think that's probably, you know, the best place on the earth to be right now. Is it that much fun kind of coming to work every day and working with those guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fun when you're winning the bets and not losing them. I got a bet tonight with Steve Smith on the Michigan-Michigan State game. So I'm crossing my fingers that my Wolverines get the dub, because if they don't, I got to wear a Michigan State football helmet on TV next week, which is not going to be pretty.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, man, I mean, it's criminal to be able to go to work every day and talk about the game we all love and, that we would talk about whether it was our job or not.
Right.
You can't beat that. But it's a job too. You know, it's not all fun and games. Obviously, you guys know that as well as anybody. That, man, this takes some work and some grinding. And, you know, and I spent a long time, you know, in Milwaukee and, you know, in oddball college towns when I was covering colleges and doing those back to back road trips in the dead of winter. You know, and getting stuck in O'Hare Airport and these sorts of places. And you know, you put in your time, but hopefully you get to a place in your career. You know, and I've been doing this 19 years. Hopefully you get to a place where you get a chance to enjoy it and really work at a place that appreciates you and does it first class. And that's what's going on at NBA TV and NBA.com and all throughout Turner Sports. So, I mean, it's obviously I have no complaints, and I certainly enjoy the guys I work with. So I would tell you in a heartbeat that if it looks fun to you on TV, it's 10 times better to us doing it, and that's good that folks are enjoying it, because we're enjoying doing it.
Yeah, we definitely are enjoying your work. Sekou Smith, check out his work on the Hangtime blog on NBA.com. Check him out on NBA TV as well, and follow him on Twitter. His handle is @SekouSmithNBA. Sekou, thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Sekou.
Hey, no problem, guys. Take care.